It's Wednesday, time for our weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for coming on the program.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Also with us on the line is John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, it's good to have you with us as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, President Obama, as we all know, was in Watertown on Friday. He delivered the commencement address at Lake Erie Technical Institute's graduation ceremony. Jonathan Ellis, I know you were there. Was Watertown a good host to the president?
Oh, they did a very nice job, yeah. I thought. It's hard for me to guesstimate, probably, certainly hundreds, maybe probably even more than that, of people who sort of lined the streets for the motorcade as it traveled from the airport to the auditorium where the president gave his speech. There were people, obviously everybody with their cell phone cameras out, taking pictures, people waving, people with signs welcoming the president, people waving American flags. There were some limited protests scattered about here and there. Mainly the ones that I saw were related to the Keystone XL pipeline. Certainly very respectful that I saw. The audience was respectful. The audience gave the president a number of big cheers. The governor who helped present the president did a very nice job. So yeah, it was a very nice event, and generally free of politics.
Was that, Jonathan, surprising at all, or was that kind of expected when the president comes, makes a rare visit to South Dakota?
Well, I would have expected it. I would have expected it not to be very, overtly partisan, and that being because the president is coming to celebrate an issue that I think is very bipartisan in the sense that everybody supports, trying to get people some training and skills, workforce training, so that they can better themselves and frankly better their communities. So it's just not a partisan issue, and that was the reason why he was coming to the state. So I don't think there is a surprise that it was relatively free of politics.
John Hunter, what are your thoughts on the president's visit to Watertown last Friday?
I agree. I think these, at least the ones that I've been to, I didn't go to this one. I know Jonathan was there, but the other ones have largely been free of that. I think for most people, they believe it would be an honor for a president, even if it's not the party that you support, would come to your state. And a lot of people would want to see a president in person in their lifetime. And so I thought it was very nice all the way around. And again, as Jonathan is describing, this is a great event, right? It's had a lot of graduate success for students, and it's a great event. And I think Watertown, prepared as quickly as they had to. I mean, they didn't have much time from when they knew that, but they presented the community well, too.
And Jonathan, how was the president's speech?
Well, it was a nice speech. I thought he gave a speech that again talked about Lake Erie Tech and what a great school it is, how its graduation rate is three times higher than the national average, how it does an excellent job at job placements for its graduates. He talked about five or six individual students, called them out by name, had them stand up, talked about their situations, how they got to Lake Erie Tech, including one woman who had dropped out of high school and had some kind of low-end jobs and started a family and was kind of coming back and getting training and for more of a career. So I mean, it was a nice speech. I mean, and President Obama, and we all know this, is good at giving speeches. And I kind of thought to myself, it's unfortunate that, in my mind, it's unfortunate that he had not been to South Dakota before, and some of these other states. To keep in mind, we were on a leg of Republican states that he had not visited, and we just happened to be the last one. And I think that people had given an opportunity to actually hear him in person and more often. I think there might have, I'm not saying things would change politically or people would. That Barack Obama would win a Senate seat for Democrats here or anything like that. But I think that there might be better feelings for the president in these Republican states if he'd been able to get out to them more often.
John Hunter, looking at the president's speech being at Lake Erie Tech, did that kind of fit well with some of the topics, the important issues that Governor Dugard has raised regarding tech schools and education in South Dakota?
Absolutely. The initiative by Governor Dugard and the contribution by Denny Sanford, I think, raised the profile a lot of tech schools in South Dakota and the value that they can bring. There's all sorts of kind of things in the news talking about workforce development and communities being short of workers or ill-prepared workers and so forth. So, yeah, I think it very much dovetailed and with Governor Dugard's proposals and what we're trying to get done in South Dakota.
Earlier last Friday, the president was in Oregon at the Nike headquarters making his case for the Trans-Pacific Trade Deal. I'm wondering, John Hunter, if that overshadowed his South Dakota visit, if this visit to South Dakota got much attention nationally.
Well, it got a little bit as I looked at national media for the day, and it largely, remember, he had proposed a number of weeks ago, maybe months now, on free technical education for people, that it would be like high school, where it would be a public education and in a partnership with local, you know, kind of local, state, and federal funding to get that done. It hasn't gotten a lot of traction nationwide, but this was an opportunity, I think, to bring that up again. You know, you kind of announce it, and then you get distracted with other things, and so this kind of brought that back. I still don't think it'll probably get a lot of national traction where it would be passed, but it did get some national exposure, at least, I think, for South Dakota. And no, I don't think it was the South Dakota visit was at all overshadowed by the Nike visit, either, you know, kind of locally or nationally.
John Ellis, did you see some national coverage with this?
Well, the Oregon trip and the trade, the Pacific Trade Agreement, has been sort of the big policy issue in the last few weeks. And in fact, there was an issue in the Senate yesterday in which the Senate Democrats were blocking movement on that because of some issues that they have with the trade pact. So that's been the issue of the day. I mean, for me, it was not overshadowed. I mean, that did not overshadow his visit to South Dakota. We were interested in the president's visit here, and less interested in the Oregon deal.
John Hunter, how soon do you think it'll be before South Dakota gets a visit from another president? Will we have to wait another dozen or so years?
No, I think there's going to be some effort on most presidents' part to visit almost every state, if not. I mean, it was kind of the Tom Daschle deal where he would visit all 66 counties, and at some point it became a point of pride, and people knew it, and people expected it. And, you know, travel can be, I mean, this is a relative term, but relatively easy for a president, right? I mean, you fly in Air Force One, it's a pretty nice plane, and you can get there, and, you know, you can hit several states in one day if you needed to. I think the total time in South Dakota was a couple of hours. I mean, you could really do that. So I think you'll see more visits by presidents, and they'll all try to fill out the dance card and get all 50 states.
John, do you think we'll see many of the candidates for 2016 coming to South Dakota?
No.
No?
We won't. Well, no, I mean, who knows? I mean, just because of our primary. I mean, it's later, and typically the races are decided by the time our primary comes around. You know, 2008 was special in the sense that, you know, Barack Obama was pretty much, by the time our primary came, pretty much was the inevitable nominee, and Hillary Clinton had just decided not to bow out and just to pursue it till the end. So that was kind of a special race for us. But, you know, given where our primary is situated, it's pretty unlikely that unless it's a drawn-out, you know, and it's possible on the Republican side that this would happen. There's so many potential candidates, and each of them sort of having their own groups that they're drawing from, that maybe there won't be a sort of a knockout punch by one of them in the very beginning, you know, and then closer up. Then if that's the case, then we might see some of them. But just it's pretty unlikely, just given the fact that our primary is so late in the season.
South Dakota State Senate Republicans have picked new leadership to replace Senate Majority Leader Tim Rave and Assistant Majority Leader Dan Lederman, who resigned after the 2015 session. John Hunter, who are the new leaders?
Well, you know, Corey Brown, I think, is one, and Jim White of Huron is the other. I think Corey, already in a leadership position, that was kind of a layup. I didn't see the Jim White thing coming, but that's more maybe my lack of observation of that thing. I think it's pretty seamless. I don't think there's a lot of controversy to those kinds of things. You know, Corey is experienced, and I've heard good things about Jim White. So I think it won't be a huge change in Republican politics in the legislature.
Jonathan Ellis, what impact do you think new leadership will have on the Senate Republican Caucus? Anything, or is it, as John Hunter just said, things will continue as they have?
Well, I think, as John said, the leaders that were elected have pretty decent reputations and so forth. I mean, Gary Kamak, who was Kamak, if I'm pronouncing that right, who was elected the president pro tem. I think the things I've heard, though, is just such a lack of experience. If you look at, for example, you know, you have Corey Brown, who took a step, who was a president pro tem, who's now the majority leader, and that's a step down. And that's because Corey Brown is highly regarded, and now he's got to because they don't have leadership, they don't have the experience, okay, and so they have if you look at their president pro tem now, Senator Kamak, he's in his first term. I mean, he does have one House term, but this is his first term in the Senate. Jim White's in his second term in the Senate. You know, their whips are either in their first or second terms. They have some lobbyists I've talked to tell me, and to be blunt, I mean, there's a lack of talent over there right now, and that's just because they don't have the expertise. You know, so Corey Brown, in a sense, by becoming majority leader instead of, you know, continuing on as president pro tem for his last year before he's termed out, he's trying to, you know, give, you know, he's trying to, I think, you know, give some leadership to this Republican caucus that has to negotiate agreements between the House side and the governor's office. So, you know, there's a big concern about the number of years of service that they have in this group. And if you compare it to the group, for example, that was in 2011, you know, the leadership, I mean, there's a big number of difference in number of years in legislative experience that they've had. So that it'll be interesting to see how the Senate in this last year here, how the Senate, you know, reacts, and how it reacts with the House and how it reacts with the governor's office, because there's just not a lot of experience.
You know, Jonathan, the question then, and would you believe that this with lack of experience is going to be more the norm given term limits, and the 2011 situation was maybe the outlier?
You know, that is an interesting thing. I mean, there are term limits, but term limits have been around for a while now, and maybe this happens. I mean, if you look at, back a few years ago, when you had Bob Gray, and then even going further back, Dave Knutson, it's a question of whether or not enough people are going to be able to switch from chamber to chamber. And I think Bob Mercer had an interesting story yesterday on his blog about how there are so many House members who are meeting term limits now, and what's going to happen with him. Are they going to be able to make the switch to the Senate? So term limits are a big part of this. There's no doubt about it. Whether or not it's going to happen again, that there's so few people with so little experience, you know, a lot of it just depends on whether or not they can make that transition from the other chamber.
Attorney General Marty Jackley is preparing explanations for initiated measures that will be the subject of petition signatures to get them on the 2016 ballot. A couple of them include one that would legalize marijuana in the state. Another would put an interest rate cap on short-term loans. John Hunter, looking at these, do you think either will make the ballot? And what do you see as the level of controversy on these two measures?
Well, I think this is a watershed moment, frankly, and South Dakota, maybe in the United States, for initiated measures. I think this is I try not to use too many metaphors, but this is a fork in the road where, you know, there's a strong sentiment of making it easier to get things on the ballot and to make things more difficult, essentially. Not necessarily difficult, but to limit the number of them to important issues. And so I think the South Dakota ones that are going to be coming up, both on marijuana and on the interest rates, I think are going to get, there's actually going to be attention from outside the state on these things. You know, that, and that's part of what Rick Wyland is getting involved with now, too, is kind of post that Senate campaign, is to try to keep South Dakota's initiative process alive and well, and maybe even a forerunner in doing this kind of thing. So I think it's just an interesting time for these kind of publicly initiated measures and how that relates to what the legislature does. Is it, are we going to have a shift to, you know, many laws being created through the initiative process, or is it going to return more to the legislature representing citizens?
Jonathan Ellis, do you see that we're perhaps on a fork in the road regarding initiated measures and referendums?
Yeah, I think John has kind of nailed it. There'll be, my expectation is, and we saw, the, going back to Corey Brown, he had had a sponsored a measure that would have made it a little more difficult to get, it would have required more signatures than what we current interpretation of in order to get initiated measures and referendums. And the hint there is that, so he withdrew that, but that, you know, there'll be, more than likely, there'll be some legal challenge to the way that we interpret the number of signatures needed. And I'm almost certain that that will come from the payday lending industry when and if we get a measure that would cap usury, would cap interest rates. So I would expect that there'll be a court challenge, and that's something that, you know, they basically hinted at, and I think everybody's expecting it.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Jonathan, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Carl.
And John, thanks for joining the program as well.
Thanks. Take care.